Hello, everybody. Today happens to be Passover, for those of you who know. For those of you who don't know, it's Passover anyway. Passover is the day we celebrate or commemorate the liberation of the slaves from Egypt. So I just want to say to you, whatever your Egypt is, whether it's an addiction, a bad habit, complacency, laziness, unwilling to take risk, a person in your life that shouldn't be, I just had the thought, maybe I should tell you, today's a good day to change it. We have spoken quite a bit in the past about our ability to change things, about our ability to change the state of health of our nation, and perhaps we have to do it one person at a time, but there's no question we can have impact. And in that, we've spoken about epigenetics, recognizing that disease conditions, all of the disease that we talk about, these conditions are not necessarily passed along as inevitable. That's the way science used to think of it, that these diseases are passed along as, oh, sorry, it's in your genes. It's just DNA transfer. Your parents had it. Your grandparents had it. You're done. But we're realizing now that within the strands of DNA, the genes may be switched on or off, and they may be switched on or off to varying degrees. It's not necessarily just up or down. And what the Human Genome Project revealed that had incredible promise is we have some control. Maybe not total control. We don't yet know how much some is, but we have some control over how those gene switches are flipped. And when you look at the amount of research, there's a tremendous amount of research now. This is not brand new anymore, but much of the research has been aimed at identifying gene expression in cancer and lupus and MS and all the progressive diseases. But by this point, a fair amount of research has identified genetic switches, specific genetic switches, that may activate insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes, receptor site compromise, hypertension, hormonal imbalances. Now, the science is really complex. Somebody's joining us today who's far smarter than I am. I'm going to introduce him in a minute. And he's probably better at interpreting the science than me, but I am determined. I sometimes devote 2 weeks or more to reading and interpreting and understanding, and I make phone calls, and I ask somebody smarter than me, can you explain this to me? I want to get the impact or the relevance behind a journal article, and sometimes I realize it's nonsense. It's very skewed. But other times, it really has impact. This morning, I was having my favorite breakfast with a friend at one of my favorite breakfast places, First Watch. If you ever come visit me in Florida, we'll go there. And I overhear a woman at the next table complaining about her ex-husband, which is not uncommon in Boca Raton. And I'm trying not to listen, but she's talking loud. And then she says, and he refused to pay for half of the DNA test. He just wants to give her the drug. How do we know if the drug is even good for her without the test? So now my ears perked up. I didn't care much about her ex-husband, but what is this DNA test? And it's really interesting because this comes on the heels of several conversations I've had with people far smarter than I am. So knowing me, I interrupted. Before you knew it, I was sitting at her table, and she spent a little time telling me what a jerk her ex-husband was, but I kept asking about the DNA test. So she told me there's a $750 test that comes with a cheek swab, and they can tell by her daughter's genes with a G, not the genes that she wears, they can tell by her daughter's genes whether or not a specific ADHD drug would be good for her or not. The last drug her daughter was on caused extreme weight loss, and she said she's skin and bones, and it didn't solve the problem. So, of course, the mom took the daughter to a new doctor, and the doctor said, I would never randomly give her a drug. I would gene test her to see how the drug would behave. Now, I wasn't surprised by this, but I was intrigued because it's becoming more and more widespread. And I've had several conversations with the CEO of a medical group, Clayton Thomas, who wants to be introduced as just a guy. So soon I'll introduce you to just a guy, Clayton Thomas. We've had many conversations regarding how we can use the knowledge that we now have of epigenetics to streamline prescriptions, not only in drugs, but in exercise and in eating. And we know there are some people who could eat anything and stay lean. We know there are others who will tell you they look at food and gain weight. We know some aerobic instructors get really thin, and others, even with the same class load and similar diet, have flabby thighs. So is this genetic, or more importantly, is it epigenetic? And one of the journals that features a great deal of information on epigenetics and pharmacokinetics, big words, which is pharmacokinetics is how a drug interacts, and Clayton, you'll correct me if I don't say it correctly, but how a drug interacts not only in addressing the symptom or disease, but how it interacts once it's in the body in terms of how is it absorbed, how is it distributed, how is it metabolized, and how is it excreted. So FASEB is the Federation of American Societies for Experimental Biology. They put out a fantastic scientific journal that looks at epigenetics and pharmacokinetics. And that's the area that we are moving into. As we start to understand how this applies to us, we gain a far greater power. Before we go on, I'm sharing a few big words, words you've heard before, but I want you to be clear on what some of them mean. So we may talk about, or Clayton may bring up, DNA methylation. You've heard the term methylation. You know about methyl groups. This is a huge topic of discussion in changing gene expression. So in very simple terms, we're talking about a chemical reaction that places a methyl group, if you remember this from high school science, it's a combination of one carbon and three hydrogen atoms. It places a methyl group at a particular spot on a strand of DNA. So the strand of DNA doesn't change, just that spot does. And that has the impact of literally switching off a gene. And why is this important? Because if we can impact methylation, we can impact gene expression. And if we can impact gene expression, we can change outcomes. And that leads us to the next definition, the word I used already, epigenetics, which means the study of changes in organisms caused by modification of gene expression rather than alteration of the genetic code. In other words, the DNA strand stays the same, but the genetic expression changes this. So why am I sharing this? Because I want us all to become genetic scientists? No. Because we're living with the responsibility of facilitating changes in people's health. And if we know the environment can change genetic expression, and stress can change genetic expression, and toxins can change genetic expression, then we have to realize the days of the one-size-fits-all exercise and nutrition program are far behind us. And it gets even more exciting when we realize, A, we may be able to change gene expression, and B, we can work within the parameters of their present genetic condition to bring about change if we understand how the applicable or relevant genes are behaving. I want to just talk briefly about one study, and then I'm going to turn it over to Clayton. This is an interesting study that was published in the FASEB journal using overweight and obese teens. The fact is, adulthood diseases are more prevalent among those who are obese as teenagers. And this is evidenced epidemiologically, but not with a full explanation until now. This study looked into possible epigenetic differences between high and low responders to a 10-week multidisciplinary weight loss program in 204 overweight or obese adolescents. The weight loss program included a healthy, balanced, natural diet, the same for all of them, with some individual factors like caloric intake, modest in carbs and protein, a physical activity program, and a weekly meeting where they were coached. They looked at weight, body mass index, and so on. Those who lost more than 1.1 in their BMI were considered high responders. The low responders were almost zero. They were 0.1 or 0.2. They looked at their DNA methylation patterns, and what they found is they could have predicted who would lose weight and who would not by looking at their gene expression. So here's the study conclusion printed in the abstract. This study demonstrated that a person's epigenetic profile can predict the outcome of a weight loss treatment and may assist in developing new obesity therapies based on individual gene expression. It is even more important for adolescents because adolescent obesity has been an independent risk factor for adult diseases. In the future, personalized diet and weight loss treatment aided by utilizing individual epigenetic profiles may prove more effective, economical, and require less effort than most current programs and diets. With a genetic and epigenetic knowledge-backed weight loss program, people may be able to achieve their optimal body weight easily and keep it that way. Now, genetic testing used to cost upwards of $3,500, but now that the science evolves, it's affordable, it's user-friendly, so I asked Clayton, just the guy, to join us today to share some insights. So, Clayton, want to share some insights?
Phil, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure. You know, you hit on so many points, and I'm sitting here jumping. I'm like, oh, I could touch on that. I could touch on this. You know, and we look at epigenetics, right? And, you know, you start talking about obesity. And you look at the Lancet with some of the articles that they published over the last year and a half, looking at obesity in England. Because of their socialized healthcare system, they're more focused on decreasing costs. They've drawn correlations between obesity, type 2 diabetes, and Alzheimer's, and that there's a direct correlation to type 2 diabetics over time becoming Alzheimer's patients. And you look at that and you go, where's the correlation? And it goes back to what you're talking about. It's heavy metals and environmental toxins that also shut off methylation, proper methylation, which screw up the epigenetics, and those toxins are usually stored in fat. And to look at those indicators, you know, you touched on pharmacokinetics, and one of the things in the healthcare industry also is pharmacogenomics. And the healthcare industry is moving into personalized healthcare. It is what the government wants. It is what consumers are really starting to demand. Is many consumers and those which have some affluence that read, that do their research, know what's going on with the Human Genome Project. They know what's going on in science, and they also want attention. And they want people to provide them with the information that they require to make an informed decision about their own health and their own performance, whether they're an athlete, they used to be an athlete, or they're someone just looking to stay in shape. So if we're looking at the healthcare side of things, for what I work with physicians, you have doctors looking at pharmacokinetics and pharmacogenomics as ways of how an individual will process a drug, will process a medication, but also looking at the contraindication of multiple drugs, which is the bigger part than just how a single drug is metabolized, that when you have an individual that is on multiple drugs, how are those multiple drugs affecting the body? And not just the body, the specific individual, how they're affecting them.
And Clayton, when we look at our population and we look at 60% of the adult population is on at least one medication for chronic disease, nobody bothered to look at these potential drug interactions based on their genes. And I want to point out, you're sharing this technology with doctors. And aside from those doctors who are progressive and innovative enough to go to the A4M conferences or the FASEB conferences, most doctors are still willing to prescribe meds per the old protocols, and they fail to get people well. And that's got to be your greatest obstacle, right? They're just not interested.
That they're not knowledgeable, and it's the big problem in the healthcare industry. And, you know, I think healthcare wellness professionals get this because doctors think that they're smart. And honestly, to become a doctor anymore, you don't have to be intelligent. You just have to pay attention in class and go through class and follow directions really well. And I've heard that from doctors who train other physicians, and you know, they've told me, look, if you want to become a physician today, you follow instructions and you don't get out of line. Because if you start using rational thought and asking questions, you'll fail. But they're in a profession that is specifically predicated or has been predicated on the past on, you know, being a drug dealer, you know, unless you're a specialist.
Correct.
And, you know, it's not one that has bode well for many of their patients, and that's changing. You know, and I can't say that doctors in general are starting to pay attention to it. The good ones are really looking at what's going on. But the advancements in medicine, we can say, on the pharmacokinetics and pharmacogenomics has also moved now towards the wellness component. There's a lab that over the last year and a half has taken what we can do for DNA testing, looking at how your body metabolizes drugs, but now also looking at an individual's specific genetic makeup for weight loss, the amount of macronutrients that they would need in their diet, and their response to exercise, as well as micronutrients, and how you process and assimilate them. So there are genes that can be looked at to specifically have an idea of how one would process drugs. We also have genes that are predicated on how you build muscle and what nutrient profile you need. Are you an individual that needs more fat? Are you one that needs more protein? Maybe you need more carbs. You know, there's been the blood type diets and which there's great information that comes from a blood type diet, and prior to where we are scientifically now, that's about as close as we've been able to get to genetically to say, okay, this is how we might want to eat based on where our blood type is from. Now you can do a swab, send it to a lab, they'll look at a group of genes that will give you the indicators, you know, specifically. Your weight
loss just so you know, because for years I've been reading research as you do, and I'm sure you have an easier time understanding it than I do, but I painstakingly seek out people who will educate me, and they test specific genes, and every gene has a name, and there's a lot to learn. But what I really love about, and everybody got a copy of the report, just so you know, so they're not coming into this blind. But what I really love is, in the past, trying to make sense out of this was very difficult, but it is delivered scientifically in such user-friendly terms. That's the beauty of the report. So I want to say it's simple, it's affordable, and this is the kind of thing that, you know, we talk a lot about having an edge that's visible over other personal trainers. Personal trainers aren't going to be doing this tomorrow. I can promise you that. Clayton's trying to break through to the doctors other than those progressive ones. So it's a chipping away process before it finds its way to the trainers. So this is cutting edge stuff, and that's why I wanted him to join us here today.
You know, and really it's an advantage as a wellness professional, you know, whether you're a physician or you're a practitioner. You know, and I think like Phil's given me some insight into the level of professionals that get together for this group. You guys are at the top echelon of your field. You're not a trainer. You are a healthcare professional, and you take some of the buzzwords that are in some of the genes that are tested. You look at MTHFR. You look at ApoE, and these are terms that consumers have heard. You hear a lot in the media about MTHFR, and you know, are you deficient in your MTHFR gene, and you know how people are trying to correlate that, but they don't know where to get it, and they don't know how it correlates. Now you've got a test that can be interpreted by an individual, but this test can also be used by a professional to provide profound levels of information when consulting with a client. In conjunction with the other services and benefits that you provide.
I want to clarify something. You know, you mentioned blood type, and I find a lot of flaws because there are many variables beyond blood type. So Dr. D'Amato's work was groundbreaking but relatively impotent when you put it into the real world, in my opinion.
It's rudimentary. Yeah, it is rudimentary, absolutely.
But here's what I love about this. This doesn't give you your genetic profile when you were born. In other words, I'm a B negative, and I'm always going to be a B negative. That's not going to change, right? But this doesn't give you your genetic information as of the day you were born. This gives you your genetic information today. So if some of those switches have been flipped to varying degrees, we're looking at a snapshot of the moment you take that swab, right?
Absolutely. And it goes to the ability to measure, you know, that is what science is based on. And when you get into the epigenetic conversation, we know that you can change gene expression, as we've touched on. So there's nothing saying that you get a genetic test done now, and that my partner is a clinical research scientist, and she's done molecular design work and cloning work, and we've had these conversations because you look at a lot of the cancer screens, and Angelina Jolie is a great example because she is the shining example of how not to have a genetic test done. You don't have a genetic test done, find out that you have a marker for a specific type of cancer that might be active, and you go cut off both of your breasts. It's not recommended, you know, because epigenetically, you can make some changes to lifestyle. You do a couple things to clean your body up and whatnot. You can turn those genes off. And then if you have a client that, say, has a test done, and they're looking at their fat loss response to cardio and their HDL response to cardio, and they're a little bit skewed, and you're able to take that information as a professional based on their diet, their exercise levels, and how you train them, and put them through a process that maybe over 3 months or 6 months, you make some dramatic changes in their lifestyle, they improve their fitness, they improve their wellness, you have another genetic test done to see if they've changed. No one's done that. No one's ever had that conversation to say, you know what, genetically we're going to look at your typing right now, but also because of the level of professional that I'm at, we're going to do a secondary analysis later on to have an idea if we've been able to change you genetically based on your expression. As we know, we can't change your genes, but we're going to change how your genes are communicating and how they're functioning based on what I'm doing with you. And this is where things are going, you know, scientifically, because the conversation of epigenetics is nowhere near where it will be in the next couple of years. And pharmacokinetics and pharmacogenomics in the next 5 years will be standard of care in the healthcare industry. It will be mandated because it's going to save the healthcare industry hundreds of billions of dollars from people using the wrong drugs and wrongful death cases and whatnot. But
how do you think
perspective is,
how do you think Big Pharma feels about this?
You know, you get into a debate of, you know, do they find benefit? Do they like it? Do they not like it? Because
it changes
the concept of
blanket prescription, right? It changes the idea of if this, then that. If this symptom, that drug. It changes that radically, right?
And there's also the issues of if you do healthcare properly, people get off the drugs. Yeah. You know?
Right.
So that's the bigger kicker, you know, and we start looking at environmental toxicology and whatnot and how that plays into it, that if you remove the etiology of something, you don't have symptomology, and without symptomology, you don't have a diagnosis, and without the diagnosis, you don't have pharmacology, and then you don't progress down the our managed care, you know, system. So you can look at it from a patient care standpoint, and from a payer standpoint, the drug industry is going to have to come in line because those that are writing the checks, that are paying them the money for the drugs that they're producing, will dictate how that's done. And within the next 10 years, we'll probably be in a one-payer system for healthcare as well. And I don't know if you guys have seen what's going on with Obamacare, that it's bankrupting the healthcare system.
Yeah.
You know, United Healthcare is bowed out. It's broken. But we will be moving to a one-payer system. That's what they want. But we're at a point now where consumers are going to be given enough information to make intelligent decisions about their health and about their wellness. And you can be at the forefront of that trend and be a revolutionary part of that, or you can be reactionary and go, oh, I heard about it, and yeah, I kind of blew it off. And that's really the opportunity of where we sit right now. I mean, you can be at the forefront, and I think it was Malcolm Gladwell that wrote many years ago, you either innovate or die.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you see a trend and you get ahead of it, whether you look at it on a micro level, if you're looking at in your own facility or in your area, but if you look at it from a professional, as a macro standpoint, with social media now, you can get clients all over the country, all over the world.
Clayton, one of the things that we've spoken about is, you know, having had a significant amount of exposure to the medical field and knowing this group and how it separates from the bulk of the personal training field. When I ask the question, who will be better at taking somebody with chronic disease, and I could list them, type 2 diabetes or hypertension or hyperthyroidism or hormonal imbalance, who will be better at restoring that person to health, the people in this group or the doctor prescribing meds? There's no question. There's no question.
No, there is,
because
there
the
is
medications,
no question.
Right, because the medications don't cure the disease, period, right?
No.
So
and,
every
– and.
Go ahead.
Well, just to add a point to that, the medical establishment today is very similar to the police department. They're almost identical in different fields. The police department is not here to protect you. And that's the disconnect that people get. You know, the police are called after something happens. You know, your doctor is called after something happens, and then they'll prescribe something for you. They're not predicated on wellness, they're not predicated on prevention. They're not predicated on remission. You know, they need to give you stuff to treat your symptomology that will lead to other symptomology that they can give you more stuff to treat because you have to keep coming back to them. If they were really good at their job and you got well, they don't make any more money.
Now, guys, I told Clayton he only has until 4:30 because I'm going to keep today's call to an hour, and I do have Jordan Rubin joining us in a few minutes. So, Clayton, what we will do is talk about you behind your back. That's what we do. And in all likelihood, we will have you back for an entire call and maybe even invite you to one of our Be Better Family Vacation weekends, which are always a blast. So, you know, we'll see how this progresses. But I'd like to open it up to any questions at all. And I'll say this. One of the challenges this group has had, knowing what I just said, knowing that who's going to be better at getting somebody with chronic disease, well, this group, it's a confidence thing. And they're all very confident in their own microcosm, in their own universe, but there's still that intimidation of, well, I'm not a doctor. And I think this kind of gives a little more edge. It kind of raises the confidence up because you're stepping into a realm that doctors aren't even in yet. You're stepping into science. This is not doctor, right? This is scientist. So with that said, anybody have any thoughts or questions for Clayton while he's here?
And it's professionalism.
Yeah.
You know, the first thing I want to address... You know,
introduce yourself first.
Oh, Phil, Tasso Kyriakis. Clayton, pleasure to meet you. First thing I want to just sort of the revelation I have on this whole deal is, you know, we constantly run around and we're concerned about we're not doctors. But I think, and I don't know if it's a political thing, but, you know, a lot of people are going to support Donald Trump because he's going to go in there and he's going to get great advisors. What we're doing, I think, is we don't have to worry whether we're doctors or not, because what we've done is gotten a medical advisory staff or a healthcare professional staff surrounding us now that is our resources that gives us the direction in the areas that we're going to go. So I think that has to become a moot point for us when we have a tool like this in front of us that we work with. And, of course, the second thing I want to know is how much does it cost so I can get one done on myself to start familiarizing myself with it.
Yeah, I think Phil can get some of that info out to you guys, and then we'll have some discounts.
$399 right now. $399 is the price, but if you guys are interested, we'll figure out how to work with that. So just know that your clients can get this test from you for $399. Okay, that's as of this moment. So as we talk and we decide how we want to integrate this, and I'm hoping we do, you know, we figure out a way to negotiate a little better deal. Anyone else while Clayton's here? Don't be shy, guys. I know Jim's with his kids. Some of you are muted.
The one final comment, you know, is when you talk about the comparison with doctors, it's the core component that I have to deal with in my life, you know, and that is the reason I carry the title that I do. My dad told me when I was 12 that I wasn't allowed to become a doctor because I grew up in a veterinary practice, and that's why I go by just a guy. I'm like, look, I train doctors. I'm not one, and you can trust. And you know, I tell people, you can trust me. I'm not a doctor, you know, because most doctors are pigeonholed. You know, they're trained specifically into one area. You can look at an orthopedic surgeon. You can look at I work with some of the top neurosurgeons and orthopedic surgeons in the country. And if you're working with them, they're going to tell you one thing. You need surgery. You talk to a podiatrist, he's going to look at your feet and go, you know what, there's some stuff I got to work on here. You can talk to a chiropractor. The chiropractor is going to tell you know what, we need to do an adjustment. And chiropractors are much more progressive than other doctors, but they have their specific area of expertise. Whereas if you're an outside professional, you know, and I will vaguely group myself with you guys because we're
prettier,
outsiders
prettier.
Comparatively. What's that?
We're prettier.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'm not going to argue that point. Phil's seen me. He will agree with you. I'm kind of a cross between Quasimodo and the Elephant Man, but only the good parts. But the ability to have a level of professionalism, to know that you're more advanced than your competition, but also the adjoining industries that go along with you is the core. It's like, look, I'm doing this because I have to take better care of my patients, and I want you to perform better. That's why I'm doing this. You're like, yeah, I'm not a doctor. That's why I'm going to be able to help you.
Hey, Clayton, I appreciate you joining us and opening the door. I promise there will be a lot of conversation about you, and the members of the group that are not here will listen to the recording. So by next week, I'll have lots of feedback for you, and in all likelihood, you're coming back, okay?
We'll chat again. Thanks, man. Have a good weekend.
Okay. Thank you. You too. Bye-bye. You guys were shy with the questions. Jordan, are you here?
I am here, sir.
Hello, Jordan. How are you?
Good.
And also,
are you in California? Let me introduce you. Let me formally introduce you, okay? Because most of these people know exactly who you are, but let me give you a little bit of an introduction. Let me think. Jordan Rubin used to – I'm not giving you the Crohn's disease because everybody knows that one. Jordan Rubin used to hang around Christopher's Kitchen. Is that what it's called, that cafe that we have breakfast in?
Yes.
Yeah. So Jordan Rubin used to hang around Christopher's Kitchen eating upscale, trendy, organic food in Palm Beach. His wife would drive a couple of miles to Nordstrom's. Next thing you know, she's driving the roads of Missouri, heading 25 miles to the nearest Walmart. So you talk about a change. And Jordan, while she's driving to Walmart, is stepping through cow shit and eating watercress out of a stream, riding a four-wheeler, wearing a cowboy hat. Is that pretty accurate?
That is.
Okay, so nobody could ever accuse Jordan Rubin of not being committed. God speaks, Jordan listens, Jordan goes. That's the way he lives his life. Now, he's out in California playing in dirt, healthfully, making mushrooms, not those kind of mushrooms, and finding the nutritional value in the trash heap, right? Compost.
Yes.
But whatever he's up to, he's always leading some kind of movement, and it's always a movement toward better health. And Jordan has let me in on something that I've been very tight-lipped about, but I thought it would be nice to give you guys a bit of insight into what's on the horizon. So we hear a lot about ancient healing. There's something about the wisdom that used to exist that is not as present anymore, not as accessible anymore. And we know that the new nutrition is leaving many people well-fed but undernourished. And it goes so much further than the limited, you know, percentages of macronutrients that the fitness field has always relied upon to prescribe nutrition. As a population, we're missing some of the things that it's fair to say we really need for health. So does that set you up pretty well?
That does. We are certainly, Phil, a world of, particularly a nation of excesses, but I really believe that there are key elements. Notice I didn't say nutrients because we're not talking about vitamins and minerals per se, but there are key elements to the ancient diets that we are completely missing today. And as I was thinking about the missing elements of our diet, there are really three types of foods, not necessarily groups, but three foods that we don't consume today. And I believe that if you look at the disease profile, look at the issues we have with metabolism, with our endocrine system, our pancreas, our thyroid, our adrenals, if you look at our gut, and then you look at our brain, our energy levels, blood supply, oxygenation, I really feel like the joints, skin, you name it, bones, they're all connected to these three missing foods. And so in a short period of time, Phil, if I can convince everybody on this Earth Day and Erev Pesach, it's probably one of the only times that's ever been combined on the same day, Phil. So Lashana Tova to you. I'll go ahead and give you these three foods. So number one, and this is going to be something you've heard before, fermented foods. So when we look at the top selling compounds in stores and practitioners' offices, probiotics and enzymes are certainly up there. We hear a lot about them. Probiotics, enzymes, organic acids, and other beneficial compounds are all found in fermented foods, and we don't get enough of them. I have said fermentation is the greatest technology known to man. It helps you accentuate the positive in food and eliminate the negative. Fermentation can make cabbage four times better for your health in the form of sauerkraut. Fermentation can take one of the top allergens, dairy, and make it digestible as yogurt, kefir. You've all heard of our Amasi, cheese, etc. Fermentation can take gluten in wheat and remove it. People haven't talked much about this, but there's now research that shows, and we've seen it done, fermentation can remove gluten in wheat, oxalates in spinach. It can remove tannins in various plants. It increases the nutrients, decreases the anti-nutrients, imparts probiotics and enzymes, and for most people, it is a missing link to gut health. So no fermented foods in our diet. no gut health. We don't consume enough of the fermented beverages, kvass, apple cider vinegar, kombucha. We don't consume fermented soy, which actually can be good, miso, natto, tempeh, properly prepared soy sauce. We talked about fermented dairy. We don't certainly get enough of the fermented vegetables, the kimchi, the sauerkraut, etc. So that's number one, no fermentation, no fermented foods, no gut health. Number two, organ meats. Now, Phil, you might find this interesting. My grandmother on my dad's side, as a young girl, was diagnosed with pernicious anemia. She was in the hospital and given as a treatment for her B12 deficiency, raw calf's liver in the hospital, right?
Pretty Jordan, crazy. We never spoke about this, and you're going to think I'm kidding. My grandmother, too. I'm telling you the truth. Pernicious anemia.
Her name wasn't Ann, was it?
No, it was Tilly.
Maybe we could be related. No. Wow, that's pretty crazy. My grandmother had other issues. Okay,
but
so
go
now
ahead.
Get this. So my dad's grandfather, on his father's side, was one of the original 50 cancer patients that Max Gerson saw and wrote about in his book, 50 Cancer Cases Cured. His name was also Max. It was Moisha, but it was changed to Max. Anyway, he consumed juices, which was part of the Gerson protocol, and raw liver, which was also part of it. Folks, we do not eat enough organ meats. And admittedly, I don't like liver. I like chicken liver better than beef liver. I like goose liver better than chicken liver. I don't eat a lot of heart, but I have before. Organ meats are what animals that are predators will go after when they consume other animals. Organ meats are what Native Americans consume. When they kill animals, they throw the tenderloin and the breast of the poultry to the dogs. Organ meats contain high levels of fat-soluble vitamin A and D. When they come from animals that are pasture-raised or wild, they are not toxic, contrary to popular belief. They're loaded with various forms of long-chain fatty acids. So when we don't get organ meats, and I'm going to throw maybe eggs into this mix, so let's call it chicken eggs, duck eggs, and fish eggs, caviar. Those have similar nutrients, long-chain fatty acids, phospholipids. They have squalene-type compounds, great for the heart. So when you don't get organ meats and eggs, you are missing out on brain health. And as a result, we are suffering from chronic neurodegeneration. So, Phil, just with those two sort of missing components of the diet, which I would say most people would say they're both yucky, right? They don't like liver, and they don't like sauerkraut. However, the more of those two you eat, the more you will like them. But
so fermentation, fermented foods, and organ meats, right?
Organ meats. And I'll throw in there eggs, although I'm not talking about chicken eggs from the grocery store, but think more about fish eggs, duck eggs, and then pasture-raised chicken eggs. They're all loaded with nutrients. And during the fat-free craze of the 90s, we avoided them like the plague. They were told to be bad for us. They contain arachidonic acid. You're right, they do, and we don't get enough of it. But number three, Phil, and the most prevalent, because if you ask any practitioner, and you and I are around a lot of docs, what's the number one underlying cause of every disease? What is it, Phil?
Breath.
Inflammation.
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 Inflammation. And I believe that our inflammation and our joint, ligament, tendon, and bone degeneration, think about this, folks. We're right now watching the basketball playoffs, or at least seeing highlights. Steph Curry doesn't play because of a joint issue. When you're a pitcher and you're out for a year because of Tommy John surgery, you don't play because of a ligament issue. When you tear your ACL, it's a ligament. When you deal with your Achilles, it's a tendon. We've got broken bones. We hear about this all the time. Now, notice we rarely, and I mean rarely, even in your profession, hear about muscle tears, right? You just don't hear people tearing muscle. You hear of people tearing ligaments, joints, tendons, connective tissue, and lots of inflammation. And it's because we consume plenty of muscle-building proteins in the form of muscle meats, fish, chicken, beef, venison. Some people eat pork. I don't, but whatever. We get egg white protein. We get dairy protein. Those are all muscle-building proteins. What we don't get enough of are the compounds found in connective tissue, otherwise known as broth. We don't get enough broth. I've been saying it since 2002 in my first book. When people come to me and I want them to cleanse, depending on what they're dealing with, I will recommend a bone broth cleanse. My other grandmother, Phil, and I'm sure yours did the same thing, I'll go out and say it, when she served us chicken, she had made roast chicken. It was one of her three meals she made us, brisket, roast chicken, and some type of cabbage dish. And then I don't know about you, Phil, but it's pretty strange when you're a Jewish kid and the other friends of yours are invited over to eat foods that have names that are pretty unappetizing, like kreplach. I mean, what could actually be worse than that? You know, Italian food sounds really cool and ends in a sort of a high rigatoni, tortellini. Anyway, kreplach is certainly not a wonderful-tasting food.
No, matter of fact, my Greek friend Pete Manolakis has never been the same since he ate gefilte fish. So, yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, Mrs. Adler's has always been a favorite around here. So when we're talking, although Mrs. interesting enough, Phil, Mrs. Adler's probably had a little bit of what we're talking about. We used to call the goop driggle that came from there. So that was quite appropriate, the jello-like substance. So, folks, the bottom line is we are at an all-time high in hip replacements, knee replacements. We are missing the components in connective tissue. So my grandmother would serve roast chicken. We would eat it, and she would sit in the kitchen gnawing on the bones. We wouldn't hear of that today. Every commercial, now with white meat chicken, thighs, chicken breast, that's all we eat. But we are missing, folks, all the important structural proteins that build our body. Our body's comprised of mostly structural proteins. What we are missing in our diet, gelatin, collagen, chondroitin, glucosamine, hyaluronic acid, and soluble minerals that are found in this connective tissue. Like helps like. We get a lot of muscle meats, we got a lot of muscle. We eat a lot of fat, the wrong kinds, we get fat. But what's missing? We got plenty of muscle and plenty of fat, seriously. What we're missing is joints, ligaments, tendons, and bones. And there is a substance that takes between 24 and 48 hours to make. I've done it many times. There's a substance that you can buy frozen for $10 a bag, which I have done for now nearly a year. It's frozen. I defrost it. It's bone broth. It's awesome. Why do I use it every day? Why have I always recommended it? For 8 reasons. Phil, there's 8 benefits now. It's up to 8. Bone broth can help support the gut. It is great to seal the gut lining. And its pre-digested source of protein is what your body's been waiting for. So it's good for the gut. It's good for the muscles. Not overly stimulating, but it is good for building some muscle. The joints. It is great for the skin. Collagen and elastin. It's great for detoxification. It is amazing for your bones. I know people say, I'm deficient in calcium, and we absolutely are, but that's not enough. There are structural proteins that are found in our diets that we can get that can make a huge difference in our health. Bone broth also helps with metabolism. This is really, really amazing because we are dealing with all kinds of metabolic issues, okay? So I'm going to repeat. Oh, and immune system support is, of course, incredibly important. So 8 benefits: gut, joint, skin, metabolism, detox, immune, bone building, muscle building. And here's the cool thing. You all probably remember Fernando's Hideaway from Saturday Night Live. I know I'm a little bit young for that, but he said his credo is it's better to look good than to feel good. So we have a hard time getting people to care about their gut. Their joints, maybe, because they feel them. Detox, that's kind of invisible. Immune system, whatever. Bone health, I can't see it until I'm old, so who cares? But if you're talking about helping someone look good, lose weight, and build muscle, I think it's pretty darn important. So,
Phil, Jordan, I got to interrupt you just for a minute because I'm going to, if you weren't planning to, and I hope you were, I'm going to lead you to talk about your newest thing. Okay, which I'm looking at right now. So I don't know if you're cringing, going, I didn't really want to talk about it, or if you're planning on it, but I'm going to. But I want to preface it by saying this has nothing to do with multi-level marketing. Am I right? And the reason I'm saying that is because this group is very sensitive to that, and they never want to be pitched to, and I just want them to understand because there's a little apprehension. And by the way, you're talking to mostly Amasi users right now, but there were some who said, oh, no, multi-level marketing, and of course you understand that response. So I just want to make that point. This is not leading to a multi-level marketing pitch. This is purely for the sake of you guys knowing what's going on because this is what's the future, right? What you're talking about is going to be
absolutely
the future.
And I'll because I'm doing okay on time, I'm going to lead into this. Where I was getting is that the bone broth benefits are inside and out, and it really is something that we should be consuming every day. It's just that good. And so here, January, I had just come off of some really challenging issues with my knee, and a big part of helping that was finding a frozen bone broth manufacturer and consuming 24 to 48 ounces of bone broth every day just as a room temperature or warm beverage. Sometimes it leaked, cost $10 a bag, who cares? It was amazing. But here I'm going to go to Florida. I'm doing seminars for 10 days, and I tell my mom, hey, can you go to Whole Foods and get me some bone broth? It wasn't there yet. It wasn't carried. Bone broth's growing. Kobe Bryant used it in his last season. Salma Hayek uses it. Gwyneth Paltrow uses it. It's amazing. They didn't have it. So I was actually in the process of formulating a collagen product and trying to find the multiple sources of collagen. I was looking for type 2, which chicken broth or bone broth is high in. I got this bone broth powder, and I was using it in this formula. Now, when I was heading to Florida, I said, I need my bone broth. I don't have any. I'm going to take this sample. I'm going to mix this powder in water, and hopefully it'll do the trick. It's the only thing I got. So I used it, loved it, tasted great, and it felt good. And then I said to my team, hey, you know that thing we were using, that bone broth powder, can you send me a spec sheet? Because I know bone broth is good for all these things, but what is the dried bone broth makeup? And I see the spec sheet. I look down. I see protein, 88.1%, and a light bulb went off. Folks, I've been a part of, in my former days at Garden of Life, four product launches that hit number one, not in their category, but out of 30,000 supplements, number one entirely. First product, Primal Defense, was a probiotic. We introduced the first coconut oil to health food stores. The weight loss sensation made from seaweed called Fucothin, and then raw protein, raw meal, number one product in the industry. When I saw that, I immediately realized what we had. We've got the first and only protein powder, not dairy, not grain, not soy, not nut, seed, or legume, that supports the gut, the skin, the joints, detoxification, bada boom, bada bing, the missing protein, coolest thing on the planet. Phil and I have sat through, more Phil than me, dozens of Dr. Pompa messages on bone broth. And what does he do? He recommends patients, and doctors recommend patients, to buy frozen, shipped expensively in styrofoam, hard to get, hard to use, even harder to make, and the compliance is low. And I immediately reached out to Phil, and I said, Phil, I don't know how this happened, but I've got the next amazing product. And really, I have introduced many products in my life, but I think this might be the most universal and diverse. So, folks, fast forward. Ancient Nutrition, which is a brand-new brand, it is not network marketing, as Phil mentioned. It is available, going to be, through health food stores, practitioners, and gyms and fitness centers and trainers. It is absolutely amazing. It can be used, get this, not only in water, not only in juice. That's the coolest thing, Phil. I had a testimonial of a woman whose name she goes by is Green Smoothie Girl. She's Robin Openshaw. She healed herself from multiple issues with a mostly vegan diet. I showed her bone broth protein. She flipped, and she's now adding it to her green smoothies. But think about it. You couldn't do that with bone broth. You're not going to have 16 ounces of bone broth in a smoothie. But one scoop of 20 grams of bone broth protein, you can't. Then I said, well, I love grains, and I eat them on occasion. I love quinoa. What if I took bone broth protein and added it to the soak water? And then all of a sudden, I have 20 grams of protein in my quinoa. And then I said, okay, I'm going to try to flavor this thing. So I made smoothies. I made bars with almond butter, cookies. It's absolutely amazing. It's slightly salty, but get this. In addition to clinically studied levels of hydrolyzed collagen type 2, chondroitin sulfate, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid, it's got 270 milligrams of potassium. So, Phil, what I told you is this protein is actually an electrolyte drink and a protein because it's providing these soluble serum proteins, minerals, and compounds that we all need. I'm talking about an infant to the elderly. The bone broth, the old saying is, good bone broth can raise the dead. So all that to say that I have been around a lot of products with the paleo trend, with the CrossFit trend, with the allergen-free trend. This will be, in my mind, the most universally exciting product in the most exciting category that will be launched maybe in my lifetime, certainly this year. And the cool thing is weight loss products come and go because no supplement will cause you to lose enough weight to keep using it. This is going to be something that we need in our diet because it is the missing protein. You don't need whey because we get dairy protein.
You know, Jordan, you mentioned it in our lifetime. In my lifetime, I saw whey protein become the most amazing seller I had ever seen. And what's really amazing is when I look at the way it started to trend and where it came from, people bought whey protein because they had no clue what it was, and they were told it builds muscle. And really, that's how it evolved. And they use great words like anti-catabolic and microfiltration, cross-flow, ion exchange. Nobody understood a word of it, but they were buying into this thing. And lots of people are sensitive to dairy, but whey protein has become the standard. And I think what's really interesting is when you talk about a protein supplement, we still think of muscle, and rightly so. But if you go into, have you been to the Firehouse in Venice Beach, like down the road from Gold's Gym? It's a converted firehouse that's a restaurant where all the pro bodybuilders go.
Yep.
And the more on the plate, the better. Like if you walked in and said, hey, guys, we're going to feed you broth, they'd kill you. Broth, right? They want to see a plate piled up with brown rice and giant chicken breasts. But I think now we are on the cusp of a new level of understanding, and this is the crossover. This is the crossover that goes from general fitness to health. And when you talk, you mentioned the cut. I think you mentioned Kobe Bryant and Selma Hayek and Gwyneth Paltrow. This is becoming the secret of the Hollywood stars. So I think your timing is impeccable. I mean, I don't know if this was just an accident of timing, but it couldn't come at a better time. So you guys are hearing about this honestly before anybody. So I thought it was important. So can we open it up to any thoughts, comments, questions?
So the protein is available now?
Great question. We're looking at roughly 3 weeks, maybe a little bit between 3 and 4 weeks it'll be available. So Phil will definitely keep you updated. Phil is someone that I reached out to because I sell really well to health food stores. I've sold to practitioners, but for the first time I think I have something that every trainer and gym may actually want. And so Phil is one of the few people that I know that has been in this space a long time, and I reached out to him for advice and where to go first to get the word out, because I believe that the hardcore enthusiasts maybe won't use this as their only protein, but they certainly should use it as part of their regimen.
May 12th, Jordan and I are going to be doing a presentation in Chicago for some top health club owners to introduce this. So I just want you guys to know you're learning about it before anybody in this industry.
Phil, the green smoothie that we use, it can go directly in that, because in the past you said no protein into that smoothie.
That's a specific week for a specific reason, and that's sort of a cleansing. So if you're asking me on a regular basis, can you mix this into the smoothie? Absolutely, yes. But in that particular week of the program, we really want to limit protein, especially for the first half of the day. So that week, I'd say not a good idea, but any other time, yeah, and I'll tell you the truth, I don't know Green Smoothie Girl. I think I might have seen her blog, but I've never mixed it in a green drink. I just got it.
Yeah.
I have four containers sitting in front of me, and one of them is turmeric, which is incredible. I mean, that's the greatest anti-inflammatory now. So there's vanilla, there's a chocolate, There's a turmeric and a plain. Is that it?
Yeah. And Phil, I would say that this bone broth protein is more detoxifying than any green juice. And so, you know, again, I'm not trying to railroad your program, but it behaves like no other protein. So it will, in my mind, be a staple in both coffee and green juice in the future.
Great.
And Jordan, Tasso Kiriakis here again.
Hey, buddy.
Hi, buddy. Not to bring up, just this is more informed rather than bringing up old stuff. The availability of the Daniel diet type of food supply, is that available anywhere anymore? You know,
it's funny. We're at the farm right now, and my daughter just found an old bag of it. But no, we don't have those products in production currently.
Okay, and I noticed on Youngevity the other day that it's a closeout of the Amasi milk and honey. Is it going away completely? Is it going to be available? I mean, should we stockpile and freeze it? I mean.
Yeah, I would stockpile it. They're replacing it. I don't want to say replacing it, but they're phasing milk and honey out and bringing in mango peach. I'm not sure if that's bringing that back. I'm not sure if that's seasonal or what is driving it, but raspberry and plain are going to stay, and in the near future, mango peach will be a replacement for milk and honey. I'm not sure if that's going to revert.
Hey, guys, I'm going to bring it back. I'm going to bring it back on track only because we have minutes left. So if anybody has any questions about the bone broth, I just want to stay on that track.
Hey, Phil, it's Tammy. I'm excited about it because I'm having major – I can't do whey at all. And I do the vegan chick. I just feel like I'm having a hard time putting on muscle, which I know has a lot to do with the gut. And so I'm excited. That's a good addition and for my clients.
Yeah, here's one thing that Phil, honestly, my biggest challenge is getting all the good stuff in, no matter how much time I have. But when you're done drinking bone broth protein, you feel like you've had nothing, like you've had water. Some people actually feel bloated with water, but the rice proteins, the pea proteins, they are heavy. They are, and think about what you have to do to get protein from a pea or from rice. This is the first real food protein. This is something that is basically, you're making a tea from the powerful connective components of an animal. So, yeah, it's really smooth and soluble. It's more like a whey in terms of consistency, but you're not going to have a lot of those issues. And Phil mentioned it. You can go a lot of directions. You've got your pure, your turmeric, your chocolate, your vanilla. I know that sounds strange, but you're going to love the taste, actually. There's 20 grams of protein, 0 grams of sugar or carbs in the pure and the turmeric. And in the vanilla and chocolate, there's 2 grams of carbs, 1 gram of sugar, sweetened with stevia and monk fruit. So they're really, really – this is going to be huge. So I'm glad to share it with you, give you a sneak peek. Hopefully you'll work with Phil on not only getting this, but maybe exposing this information to your network, if you will.
When and where are you coming to Florida, Jordan?
You know what? I don't have anything on the date for Florida, but I still have my home there, so I'm sure I'm going to be there at some point.
And he's inviting you all to stay at his home, just so you know.
Bill, will you update us to his tour in Florida so maybe we can get to see him in person and stuff?
With his permission, otherwise I'll tell you after he leaves that you just missed him.
Bastard!
Anyone else, any final thoughts as we wrap it up? Jordan, I really appreciate you taking the time, and congratulations on doing this because, as I said, the timing is impeccable, the message is amazing, and the product's actually really good. You know, you don't think of bone broth protein when you first hear about it as tasting good, right? The thought of chocolate bone broth just doesn't sit well until you try it. And I think, like whey, soon this will become common. But right now, there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve, so perfect timing.
Awesome. Well, thank all of you. God bless, and enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for having me, Phil.
Okay, bye, everybody.
Bill, are you gone?